Blog Talk Radio.
You know what gang violence is, mostly, and the people don't want you to hear this? Somebody shoots your family member, so of course you retaliate. You know what I mean? Same thing the U.S. does, except nobody even shot their family members. You know, they see somebody bomb a school and all these people get killed, so the United States feel like, ooh, that's messed up, we gotta go show them who's the real killer. This country was built on gangs. You know, I think this country still is run on gangs. Republicans, Democrats, the police department, the FBI, the CIA, those are gangs. You know what I mean? The correctional officers. I had a correctional officer tell me straight up, we the biggest gang in New York City. Straight up.
The fucking revolution, a premeditated scheme, introducing drugs on crack to us ghetto teens. Got along for war, niggas now, play of what it be like. When will niggas see they got us leading with three strikes? Can't seem to focus, hopeless, with violent thoughts I wrote this. Got the devil petrified, hot from my heart to focus. And so I learn to earn my currency in overtime. Affiliated, clearly click a military mind. May God forgive us, so we dwell inside a paradise. Thugged out and drug dealing from the womb to the block. My live mind got me surviving five rounds. My 45 got me fortified with live rounds. When shit dick, we block hit. When I drop stick, all hell, I don't bear wrath, the apocalypse. Forever ghetto, necessary picture food stamp. Outlaw thug niggas never left the food stamp.
We got a real object from front to back. To my niggas in the world, to box to back.
DJ
Now
I was born as a rebel, making trouble for the devil. Take this gangbang shit to a whole nother level. Can you feel me now? Armies in every city, definition of power. Players, you can see the war is the prophecy. Survival is the strategy. Rest in peace to my comrades, that's the seat. Walking out the streets of time, yeah, any devil petrified of a nigga in his right mind. They tell us that we hopeless and hellbound. It's for the brothers and penitentiary jail bam. I got you in my heart till the day I die. Think of the damage we could do if we wasn't high. Can you picture me low? It's the thug rap. Political contracts and bloodbath. From a Tulsa core up in the rockets, though they got you. I never let them stop me, the struggle continues.
Now if we do want to live a thug life and a gangster life and all of that, okay, so stop being cowards and let's have a revolution. But we don't want to do that. Dudes just want to live a character. They want to be cartoons. But if they really wanted to do something, it was that tough. All right, let's start our own country. Let's start a revolution. Let's get out of here. Let's do something.
I'm a soldier for life. The battle I'm fighting has no ending. To struggle is to go the distance. To win is not to care how far one must go.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How do we get access to this, Jackson?
His lawyers say they can get me in posing as a legal investigator.
You were Huey Newton's lawyer. And now, Mr. Jackson.
Mr. Jackson was sentenced 1 year to life for a $70 gas station robbery.
We have 2 hours.
Waiting a long time.
We need brothers who can maintain their self-respect in here, have true strength.
Some people are comparing you to Eldridge Cleaver, Richard Wright, Du Bois. How does your fame affect you when you're locked up all day?
Free the Soledad brothers!
Free the Soledad brothers!
Do you understand that there cannot be a peaceful revolution?
Okay, gentlemen, we're taking over.
Mr. Jackson,
sorry about your brother.
They will live to regret it. I'll see to that. Get him where it hurts.
Starring Gary Dorden from TVCSI.
This is the military, David.
Free the land, revolutionary ingredients. Welcome to another this Jordan University Radio. I'm your host, Bumar Secure, where our goal is a fivefold. Our first goal is to eradicate functional literacy among new African prisons. Our second goal is to eradicate cultural ignorance among new African prisons. Our third goal is to transform the criminal mentality to a new African mentality. Our fourth goal is to assist in the rebuilding and stabilization of new African communities. Our fifth goal is to prevent new African prisoners for release, produce new African recidivism. Before I bring on a guest tonight, I'll let it go a couple of events that happened in history during this week. On June 13th, 1866, the House passed the 14th Amendment, which was sent to the state for ratification on June the 16th. In 1910, Dr. William D. Crum, a South Carolina physician, appointed minister to Liberia. Reverend Albert Cleed, a.k.a. Jeremiah Abbeway Agumu, was born in 1911 in Indiana. Led the Shrine of Black Madonna Churches and the Culture Center to focus on Black independence, economic, and politics and religion relative to everyday community concerns, celebrating Black liberation theology. Also in 1967, Thurgood Marshall, U.S. Solicitor General, named to the Supreme Court by President Johnson. He confirmed by the Senate August 3rd and was sworn in on October 2nd as the first Black Supreme Court Justice. In 1980, Walter Rotner, who was a socialist scholar, revolutionary activist, and apparent African struggle, was assassinated. On June 14th, Che Guevara, hero of the Cuban Revolution and fighter of international rights, born in Cordoba, Argentina. In 1971, the Justice Department filed suit against the St. Louis suburb of Blackjack, charging the community with illegally using municipal procedures to block an integrated housing development. On June 15th, 1864, outwitted Lee by shifting campaign from Cold Harbor to Petersburg. The prior attack by General W.F. Baldwin Smith succeeded, but Smith hesitated and permitted rebels to reinforce their line. A Black division spearheaded the attack, knocking a mile wide hole in Petersburg Fort defenses and catching 300 rebels captured that day. 1877, Henry O. Flipper received a degree at West Point and became the first Black graduate. 1971, Bernie E. Jordan Jr., former executive director of the United Negro College Fund, named executive director of the National Urban League. For today's date, June 16, 1864. The siege of Petersburg and Richmond began. 32 Black infantry regiments and cavalry regiments were involved in the siege. Black troops were especially prominent in the following engagement: Deep Bottom, August 14th through the 16th; Darbytown Road, October 13th; Prayer Oak, October 27th to 28; Hatchet Run, October 27th to 28. In 1898, Leonard Percival Howell, who was a Garveyite, a Rastafari, and nation builder, were born. In 1943, a race riot occurred in Beaumont, Texas, and two were killed. In 1966, SNCC, which is Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, began their chant, "We Want Black Power" chant in Greenville, Mississippi, and a Delta riot turned Black Power. In 1969, U.S. Supreme Court ruled that the supervision of Adam Clayton Powell Jr. from the House of Representatives was unconstitutional. In 1970, Kenny A. Gibson elected mayor of New York. In 1971, Tupac Marvin Shakur born. Tupac was the late chairman of the New African Panther Organization and a conscious new African citizen. In 1977, in Soweto, South Africa, began a mass human rights protest and increased oppression by the apartheid government. In 1978, one of the Conrad Georgia University, Marvin Shakur born, who's a new African-American national. And also on this date, we lost a former political prisoner, from the Move Finding Movement member. Sister Consuelo, Africa. June 17, 1775. Black soldier fought at the Battle of Bombardier and Breezeville. Among the heroes of the battle were Peter Salem and Salem Four. 1897, William Frank Powell, New Jersey educated, named Minister to Haiti. In 1972, Frank Wheels, Washington security guard, fall break in at the Office of the Democrat National Committee and first event of the Watergate conspiracy. In June 18, 1941, President Roosevelt conferred with A. Philip Randolph and other leaders of the March on Washington movement and urged them to call off a scheduled demonstration. Randolph refused. 1942, Bernard W. Robinson, Harvard medical student, made ensign in U.S. Navy Reserve and became first black to win a commission in the U.S. Navy. 1963, 3,000 black students boycotted Boston public schools and protested against de facto segregation. In 1968, Supreme Court banned racial discrimination in sales in Randall Halton. In 1988, Sally Martin, South band called Mother of Gospel Music, died in Chicago at the age of 92. On June 19, 1864, infamous duel between the USS Hershard and CCS Alabama, Schoenberg, France, a black soul sailor, Jacques Pisse, displayed marked coolness and won a Congressional Medal of Honor. 1865, General Gordon Granger landed in Galveston with 1,800 men and declared freedom for Texas slaves. Despite his pronouncement, slavery in Texas continued until the ratification of the 13th Amendment. It was not rooted out legally until the state ratified the War Amendment and returned to the Union in March 30, 1870. Thus, you had the beginning of what you're going to turn June 10th. 1868, Major General E.R.S. Canby removed the mayor and aldermen of Columbus, South Carolina, and made new appointments, including three blacks, C.M. Wilder, Joseph Taylor, and William Simmons. In 1953, Albert W. Dent, president of Dillard University, elected president of National Health Council. In 1953, a boys boycott began in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. In 1969, state trooper ordered to Cairo, Illinois, to quell racial disturbances. In 1971, through the 23rd, mayor declared a state of emergency in Columbus, Georgia, due to racial disturbances. In 1980, supporters of imperialism stayed unsuccessful attempt to assassin leadership of the Free Grenada in the Caribbean. All right, thank everybody who we're gonna come on to our show since 2014. I thank all the individuals who've been educating themselves currently and constantly in the community. I thank all the people that basically been moving forward in regards to their perspective. I would say free all the political prisoners, free all the new African prisoner of war, free all the new African combatants, free all the new African captured citizens, long live resistance. This is gonna be a special broadcast tonight in regards to special tribute to our late comrade, J. Return to Essence, Comrade Sandy Shakir, for the New African Independent Movement. And I have a brother that had been been inspired, motivated, and actually contributed to, actually been dealt with in regard to the development of the brother. We're going to be speaking with Bob Masai Hosi, Bob Hondo, Brother New African Freeman, and Brother Haki Shakir. I'm gonna bring some of the brothers on right quick. Open your lines up. Okay. Free the line. How y'all brothers doing?
Free the line, brother. How you doing?
Good.
Free the line.
I'm doing well, brothers. First, I want to thank y'all all for coming to the broadcast, sharing knowledge with understanding. Thanks for all the work y'all committed. Y'all were committed in the present, y'all committed in the past, and y'all working to commit in the future. And I also want to thank y'all for y'all particular commitment, you know, to the New African Independent Movement and the commitment, you know what I'm saying, to free our new African political prisoners, African prisoner of war.
Right on. No, can't be no other way. We got to do this.
True indeed. True indeed, man. I'm going to start this off, man. You know, we've been talking about the brother saying he's secure, right? You know, I know the brother was involved in various formations and various movements. I know all y'all have personal involvement with certain things you're involved with and personal relationship with the brother. You know, I'd like y'all to share y'all thoughts in particular and just share information about the brother that can be possibly awaken the minds of another, or possibly transform the mind of an individual, or just possibly make an individual better, you know. They can inspire them, so to speak, from the thing that y'all about to say. You know what I'm saying? Also some of the history in regards to some of the brother writings and other things of that nature, right? That's always a good thing. I want to reach out to Bob Masai. How you doing, good brother?
I'm doing good, my brother. I'm doing good, thank you. Yeah.
Okay,
all right.
Okay.
Thank for this program and this opportunity to talk about the good brother. I'll just start off because, as some people know, but for those who don't know, Sanyika Shakur was a part of this BNCO collective. Actually, he played a leading role at one point. And this BNCO collective was, in fact, a cadre organization formed by and of New Africans, New African nationalists, strongly committed to the struggle for land and independence. Now, I first became involved with BNCL. I should say that I came out of the Black Liberation Army, and I was a conscious citizen of the Republic of New Africa. And when I went in 1975, that was during a period of time when, in a lot of ways, you could say, like, people functioning on the underground, on the armed front of struggle, sort of need to, like, tighten up our thing, you know, what some of us refer to as a consolidation phase, you know, looking at what we got. It was, in a lot of ways, it was the first opportunity to actually talk about certain things without actually worrying about ducking and dodging and always on the move. Unfortunately, it was because we was behind the walls, but nevertheless, it afforded an opportunity. So we wanted to look back and see, like, some things that we could have improved on. We wanted to look at some of the errors that might have been made. And it was also a time for folks to even, like, looking at, you know, the political line that they were putting forward. It was a period when not just the New African Independence Movement, actually African people throughout the U.S. there were several different organizations that were either having splits or refocusing of what they were doing. And some people might know the Provisional Government, the RNA, had just been founded in 68. So, again, this was an opportunity for some of us to really sit down and think about that, what that actually meant. And for people on the armed front, where certain things could be a matter of life or death, it became exceptionally important. One of the things that developed in those conversations was, like, it was seen that, like, the struggle for independence, for those folks who related to independence, it was felt like we really needed to have a sharper line. It wasn't a question for us of, like, you know, whether or not a nation existed, because for us the nation existed. The question was actually, what do we need to do in order to obtain independence? And so, like, out of Chicago, actually, Brother Yaki and, well, some other people out there was doing work up through the Statesville Prisoners Organization, and at one point they formed the New African Prisoners Organization. And so, like, they started work on, like, actually, you know, developing a line and a practice that we could relate to. Because some of them were also involved in this process, this national process, or at least this process within the United States, the borders of what's called the United States. They were also involved in this process of consolidating on different levels. A lot of people started gravitating towards Yaqui. And for folks who don't know him, you need to check up James Sales, Atiba Shana. Brother was a leading theoretician within the New African Independence Movement. And so anyway, people started gravitating towards publications that was coming out of there, you know, notes from a New African POW, things like Crossroads publications. There was a gravitation towards working with them, you know, and distributing material both inside and outside. I was in Virginia, but when I became aware of what they was doing, I started gravitating towards there, and we started using a lot of material where we were. At the same time, so were others. At some point, actually, a collective was formed. Now, Being Shield Collective itself, like I said, it was formed after we were inside. And some people just maintained, you know, the communications link and developed that way. Some of us felt like to form closer ties. It's at that point that, you know, I became a part of what would eventually become the Being Shield Collective, while still very much committed to the armed struggle. At some point when I got out, I went back to Jersey for a while, but then, because we really didn't have that many people outside, we had people who were doing work, but we didn't really have members outside. At some point after I had been out for about a year, I went out to Chicago to see about, you know, doing some work with that, with Being Chill then. The brother, Sanyika started corresponding, and again, the folks that aren't familiar with his writings, they need to be. The brother is like, he's sharp. I was listening to some of the tributes that people were paying on the West Coast, like the Crips, because Sanyika, you know, that's where he came from, no doubt. You know, his background was with the people. But, you know, some of the tributes when people spoke about his personality and his sharpness, his intellectual sharpness and stuff. He got involved in Being Chill, and I guess you could say from there, the rest of it was kind of history. And he immediately grasped the concept of land and independence, you know, like it was just made super common sense to him, and that's the way he explained it. I also think because, like a lot of people who came from certain formations or certain organizations on the street, when we talked about struggle, was a very real thing for them. Concept of land and territory didn't seem strange like it seemed to some other people. The fire, you could say, that he put into what he did when he was working in those in other formations, that's what he actually brought to the independence movement. But not just, you know, even though that would have been good, it wasn't just as that, I guess you could say, as the fighter. It was the warrior scholar. That's what Sanyika actually brought. And I think some other people might speak on this later. Sanyika was a valuable person. Sometimes I don't know whether he actually knew, because one of the things we used to have to tell him to be super careful, because when he was out, it's like we had to keep reminding him that the state wanted him back inside, you know. And some people, it's like, you know, it's cool to be in some places and pushing, you know, organizing, but when you have a certain value, you know, to certain parts of the struggle, sometimes you have to pull back. And again, I don't think that he really realized just how much they actually want him. He might have spoke on it, but, you know, and we weren't asking him to, like, you know, super lock himself into a house, but we wanted him to be ever mindful of just what they would do to get him behind the walls and to keep him there. Of course, he was also one of the ones who was in those super control units that they have out there in California. And I think that might have been around the time when I actually first became aware of him. I believe that's when he first started writing to us while he was in one of those units. But, again, I think other people might speak on some more aspects of that. Like I said, the times that we tried to get him away from California, if we could, you know. But it wasn't something that the state wanted to happen. Let me say this. Well, I said it, but I emphasize it again. Spee and Shear wanted to be clear about the line of independence, you know, and he definitely fitted into that. I guess that's about me for now, even though, you know, I probably have indeed some more to say later. All right.
True indeed. True indeed. We appreciate it about that. That's an interesting history, man. And especially in regards to the efforts of consolidation and how certain things were developed behind enemy lines. People still had that had a great form of commitment, or even a greater form of commitment, being behind the wall than some people they have on the street. You know, it was an even stronger commitment, and they actually more people, and especially in regards to like people. Looking at people come from the streets, or if they're not intelligent, or if they're not capable of doing certain things, accomplish certain things, and they have a lot of skills and assets that are full of potential. You know what I'm saying? That actually can be motivating and inspiring to a lot of people, especially regarding the organization thing. Yes, sir, man. You know, it's quite interesting, man. You know. I'm gonna open up a Bible Hondo, man. Let him get his words in, man. Let him speak about Sanyika, man. You know, make a contribution.
All right. I unlike Masai, I only came to know of Sanyika and Spear and Shield. In fact, as after. The journals were published, and Sanyika had started writing articles for Crossroads, and when I embraced the collective, I started, you know, reading his stuff along with Atiba's, and I saw that he was carrying the line pretty consistently and with a lot of intelligence and a lot of fire, like Messiah said, a lot of fervor, you know. He embraced the New African Communist line, and he pushed for land independence and socialism. He was pretty consistent as long as he was inside, but then it was a problematic whenever he would get released, and it was very frustrating for Yaqui, who was doing a 200 to 400 year bid itself. Sanyika, when he was released, I don't know if it was the first or the second time, you know, the brother just, you know, he wrote to him in frustration about how he would give, you know, any number of things to have one cadre on the street. And he tried to emphasize that to Sanyika, you know, over and over again. So the tragedy, what's tragic about Sanyika coming to an end is that he was never able to be that cadre who could actually work on the street and, you know, kind of help push forward the movement in the way that I think the brother Atiba envisioned it. But he remained committed to the independence movement, goals and objectives. Through his writings and through his interaction with other people. And he also emphasized profoundly, it's kind of ironic, when I think about it, the whole idea of transformation, transforming the colonial and criminal mentality into a revolutionary mentality. And that's quite a challenging thing to accomplish. But he did. He continually talked about it, and I think he pushed himself to represent that as best he could. But the struggles with being under the hatches in Pelican Bay, the psychological torture, the street battles from his, you know, all of these things probably I would say, you know, had a toll on him.
Indeed.
But he, you know, he always, and it was always a situation where, you know, if the cell would get shut down, you know, the pigs would throw his stuff away or whatever, you know, he would always come back right away and ask us to send him some more literature so he could process and teach and spread the information. I don't know what else I can say.
Okay, I appreciate that, Tom.
He was friendly with a lot of different aspects of the independence movement, a lot of different formations. He tried to maintain comradely relations, and he embraced us when we started the Rebuild Collective and started putting out the paper. He invited us to use any of his works, any of his writings, and basically to pledge his support. So we were very appreciative of that. And I think it's just a sad reflection on the state of the movement, the state of our struggle, that we weren't able to embrace a comrade like that and sweep him away from all the demons and enable him to be able to put his best foot forward.
True indeed. It's understanding, man. It's understanding, you know. We gotta work, do the best that we can, man. Work with the resources that we particularly have to make things happen, man. You know, and we all resources. With the scholarly resources, the human resources, period. You know, the human capital itself. You know, I appreciate your words, man, and your thoughts, and ideas, man. Open the line up for Brother Devin with his thoughts, with his words. I mean, Brother New African, Brother New African.
Thank you. And thank you for doing the program. You know, we do, and we in the Rebuild Collective did think it would be important to do a tribute to Comrade Senyika Shakur, both in this program and then also we'll be publishing a special issue of Rebuild that will just be a tribute to the life, the theory, the writings, and the times of Comrade Senyika Shakur. And we will have in the paper not just statements and positions from people in the collective, but also others we are open to publishing as well who have had a relationship or who have been inspired in some form or fashion or another by the writings or their personal relationship and interactions with Comrade Senyika Shakur. So unlike Hondo and Masai, I didn't have a personal relationship. My relationship, with the exception of some correspondence that we were doing under the name of the collective. But certainly, I was very much influenced by the writings of Comrade Senyika Shakur and utilized those to help bring clarity to issues in sharing the struggle for land and independence with others. You know, Senyika was one of the most talented writers that the independence movement had. One of the best polemicists that we have within the New African Independence Movement. And one of the people who was most known to the masses of New African people who are not inside the independence movement, and as a consequence, he serves as a great bridge or gateway for people into coming in to know what the struggle for land and independence was, what the New African Independence Movement was. And one of the things that Masai talks about a lot that Spear and Shield brought to the table, and that Senyika also, I think, represented, was ideological clarity and making sure that there was no doubt about where we stood and where others stood on the question of land and independence, that there's no such thing as liberation for New African people divorced from land and independence. And he makes that point very clear in his writing, both in Crossroad, other articles that he's written, and recently in Stand Up, Struggle Forward, which is a book that people can purchase still, and that we would recommend that people purchase that book and dig into the writings in that book. But also, Masai mentioned that the writings of Yaqui are available online. In fact, you can go to rebuildcollective.org and you can find under the resources tab links to Yaqui's writings. But in that as well, and on the website and resources, we have some of the issues of Crossroad that Senyika participated in, that he contributed to as well. You know, so I think it's important for people to dig into the writings. Of course, there's the best known writing was Monster, his own autobiography, in which he does discuss his coming into New African nationalist consciousness and participating in the movement. But the entire book itself is a reflection of that consciousness that he had when he wrote it. But Stand Up, Struggle Forward, I think, is a must-read for people who are involved in the independence movement. And he brings a lot of clarity. And one issue that he addresses head-on, probably more thoroughly than anyone else has addressed it recently, you know, was the repudiation of actually retreating from the National Liberation Movement while utilizing the terminology of the independence movement. He wrote a response to what was termed the Black Liberation, an article, Black Liberation in the 21st Century, a revolutionary reassessment of Black nationalism that came out of the quote-unquote New African Black Panther Party. So Senyika responded to that position paper, which, while utilizing terminology like New African, liquidated the need for land and independence and really created confusion and a lack of clarity within the movement. And Senyika's article sought to bring clarity both to the absurd nature of the position that was articulated in the initial article that he was responding to, and also clearly defended the necessity of the struggle for land and independence. And he does so with a great degree of force. And, you know, sometimes it's, you know, perhaps even more direct than others with writing. But the line that he puts out is correct in the article. And I think that's one of the most important contributions that any person who's a participant in the movement can do, is leave a legacy, a theoretical contribution that can outlive you. And that's something that is, one, being a New African communist, having a New African communist period is a rare thing. So when we lost a lot with his passing, you know, and having a New African communist who can write the way he did and had the, and not just had the capacity to write, but actually did it, you know, and his autobiography will live on and played a huge role, has played a role in prisons and outside of prisons across the country in encouraging people to take that journey of transformation from the mentality that he had prior to his engagement with the independence movement to a revolutionary New African nationalist perspective. And that is huge. And that's something that will live on, you know, for generations. And his writings will be passed on and taught and studied, not just by those who came to know him while he was alive, but from one generation to the next. You know, so we are, you know, we wanted to express our condolences as a collective on his passing to, you know, his family, his friends, everyone who was influenced and loved the comrade, but also, you know, we wanted to state his importance and his significance to us in spite of the other challenges that he had. He didn't allow those challenges to prevent him from making a lasting contribution to the struggle for land and independence.
True indeed. That's a beautiful thing, man. It's a beautiful thing. I was going to have that, that determination to still hold your line in regards to anything, any kind of calamity, adversity you face in life, still hold a line to really keep pushing forward, inspire and motivate others. I appreciate that, Conrad. I'm going to open up for High Key Secure, man, with your thoughts and ideas, man, and your words. The line is open, bro.
Free line, Conrad.
Free line.
You can hear me?
Yes, sir. I hear you. Go ahead, Conrad. I hear you.
Oh, okay. Just making sure you can hear me. You know, just to, you know, drop my few thoughts in here real quick, you know what I'm saying, on my personal relationship with Son Yuka Shakur. Listening to the other, you know, comrades and brothers, they write on with who he was as a person, because that's exactly who he was. His determination to hold that line, and he held that line through, like they said, like through all the challenges, he held that line. And I always said that I'm one of the individuals, because I had a personal relationship with him, that I'm a product of him holding that line. Like he was, you know, like that's when he brought me in. Is like one of those individuals to hold that line while he actually battled his challenges, you feel me? So I would just say that he definitely would be sorely missed. Me and the brother first started corresponding probably like through our relationship with Mutulu, because in the early 2000s I was corresponding with Mutulu first. And, you know, as I was growing up in the 1990s, I just started like this. Like growing up in the 1990s, I was living and seeing those type of things that was in his autobiography. So, you know, over the years, you know, I would say probably like in the late 90s, I would say that, yeah, like around the late 90s, you know, I claimed my new African citizenship. But as far as the proper line and things of that nature and you know, coming into a proper organization to really struggle for land independence, I really, you know, by corresponding with Mutulu, Mutulu was getting so much correspondence that he really couldn't, like, take me deeply into the right, correct line. You feel me? So, and that's why I said everything was kind of like divine timing, because this is when I, you know, Sanyika came into the picture. And I, you know, I met Sanyika, and it seemed like he was that right individual to make me see the proper, correct line. Because over these years, I, you know, like even in the 90s, I've seen the Spear and Shield collective journals and all those type of things, but I was never able to really get my hands on it. And when I did get my hands on some of the material, I couldn't really comprehend it. You know what I'm saying? It's like I needed somebody to really, like teach it to me. But at the same time, I already had, like, my little skills as a historian, because I was always an avid researcher. And that's something that I think that Son Yuka seen in me. He was like, he seen that I was an advocate researcher. I was always, Mutulu too, they always seen that I was like, my research skills was there. But I still was kind of like tiptoeing back and forth with the streets, you know, struggling with the streets, struggling to find myself, trying to, you know, see where I fit into that transformation. And here comes Son Yuka. And he was somebody that I always can relate to after I read that autobiography. Because when I read that autobiography, I think, wait, honestly, the only book I ever read before that autobiography was probably the autobiography of Malcolm X and George Jackson's book, Blood in My Eyes. probably in France Fanon book, Wretched of the Earth. So, and I really couldn't even really, like, grasp that to a certain degree until I met somebody. Like, Wretched of the Earth was hard for me. I couldn't really comprehend it until, like, you know, especially when Yaki came out with his book, like, kind of like breaking down the Wretched of the Earth. But the whole new African communist thing, you know, that was kind of like amazing to me because it was like, you know, I was like, there's such thing as a new African communist, you know what I'm saying? Like, you could push communism and fight for land and independence. That was kind of like shocking to me because I was like, even though, you know, I knew that Queen Mother Moore at one time, you know, she was involved in the Communist Party, but, you know, I didn't really think it was like nobody really pushing a communist line in the New African Independence Movement until I started to read the works of Yaki and seeing that, you know, that was, you know, Saika's mentor to a certain degree. So me and the brother started to correspond and, you know what I'm saying, like in the mid-2000s to the late mid-2000s and things of that nature, we started to build our relationship on that line, like the proper line. And that's when I started to get that line down pat, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, like you can be a new African communist and still fight and struggle for land and independence and things of that nature. So, you know, brother really helped me transform myself. So at the end of the day, you know, a lot of the things y'all see me do today or the things I do today, it's a reflection of him. Because at the end of the day, none of these things I would be able to understand if it wasn't for him. Like, we had this teacher-mentor relationship, and it was based on build. So, and that's something that I'm always going to hold dear to my heart, and now that he transitioned, is that I got to hold that line down, proper context, and that build to the movement and help other younger brothers transform themselves properly and not be out here pushing these bullshit lines, not the proper lines. And I feel like that was his strongest value to the young brothers and brothers like myself. Is like, you know, like you got to have that proper line if you want to come into this new African independence movement. You can't come into this like half-stepping and not knowing that line. So, you know, he's going to be missed. You know, and like the comrade said, man, I advise everybody to get his material, especially that Stand Up, Struggle For It book, you know what I'm saying, because that's truly a reflection of who he was and what he was striving to be despite his challenges, you know. And that's something else people can gain total inspiration from, is the fact that he was going through his challenges and things of that nature, but he always was determined to keep that struggle going for that land and that independence. So, you know, a lot of young brothers, and, you know, if a lot of young brothers listening right now, because I know a lot of young brothers, I know lots of brothers, like, they be in my inbox every day on social media. They contact me offline, online, brothers who are filling street organizations and things of that nature. I'm always trying to explain to them, like, if you really want to embrace Sayika, you know what I'm saying, because I know y'all look up to Monster Cody, but if y'all really want to embrace Monster Cody, you have to embrace Sayika Shakur. You know what I'm saying? And y'all have to do that by studying struggling. You have to truly embrace his revolutionary politics, his revolutionary nature and things of that. I don't want the brothers to really, you know, overlook that, because that's something that can bring value to their life, that can help them transform themselves, because a lot of these brothers out here in street organizations, they are looking for transformation. They are trying to take that step and to find something to struggle for, like I did when I was younger, coming up in the New African Independence Movement. Sayika gave me something to struggle for. Just for that little, you know, intro on, you know, speaking on him, that is something that I really want people to embrace. I want them to embrace the fact that he's an individual that he had that strong self-determining spirit to still struggle for what he truly wanted to struggle for, which was that land and the independence line, man.
True indeed. I appreciate that, Conrad. I'm about to add my couple of two cents in, man. Y'all basically don't say everything right. I'm going to add my two cents in regard to my relationship, bond, or communication with the brother itself. You know what I'm saying? The brother. For one thing, the people that really don't know, the brother actually was a real comedian. Brother actually liked to joke a lot. He liked to joke a lot, make a lot of jokes. You know what I'm saying? The brother liked to talk trash and have fun. That's one of the things he liked to do, right? Besides the serious image people see as a OG on the streets, as a revolutionary, the brother was a jokester. You know, the brother liked crack jokes and the brother liked music. That's one of the things he liked to do. Those were some of the things he liked to do. You know, listen to music and all that, and crack jokes, you know, and did things. In regards to my relationship come from my association affiliation with New African Cadre behind enemy lines in California, where New African Cadre is on the streets. And some relationships it was actually like communication through various like study groups, sending information propagation to the brother, like sending information to the brother behind enemy lines, and, you know, mere correspondent things of that nature, right? And like everybody basically has said that the brother was a particular asset, especially when it comes out to a particular mind state, man. You know, his mind state represented a line of people in the Calvary prison known as the Shoe Line, which is a New African prison. He's a representative of that particular aspect, coming out of that particular line. So I want to say people that are forgotten about. You know, the political prison in general. Because a lot of times people acknowledge the political prison and prison of war, they're considered to be popular or considered to be on certain lists that people know about. But there's a lot of other New African political prison, New African prison of war that actually push the line hard in regards to independence. And that whole line of shoot political prisoners from the West Coast, with the special house unit, lockdown unit, they actually had a good relationship in regards to understanding, analyzing ideology, articulating it, making a good understanding, to teaching the doctor, the other individuals behind the lines, the little brother on the streets. They all had that gift for writing. You know what I'm saying? He come from the line of brothers that are actually writers over there. A lot of brothers are writers, you know. A lot of brothers had that writing gift over there. He didn't have to have one of the gifts of writing himself, to be able to articulate himself in a way that people can actually understand from a simplistic way. He wasn't writing on a sophisticated level that people really can't interpret what he was saying. He was writing on a simplest level that people have to comprehend the words. They have to comprehend the words and actually flow with him and ride along with what he been with in particular he's teaching or what he's trying to get you to see, right? So, you know, the brother was the brother was a great contribution, especially in regards to bridging the gap between the streets and the organization structures that are in the independent movement. And that's something that we always needed. We always need it all the time anyway, in regards in general, because a lot of brothers on the streets, they are already organized. Well, it's just they are organized. A lot of them are highly intelligent. A lot of them are gifted. But they might not have know the particular direction or the particular goal or aim where they need to reach, because nobody had to present it to them or show it to them, after talking to them. And thank you, one of the ones that they're presenting it to a lot of brothers, because it actually happened a lot of throughout the 80s and 90s. A lot of brothers that actually that came from the street, from the street owners that we were going to turn into Crips and Bloods, that actually were inspired by St. Yika, as well as Dr. Matulu, as well as Geronimo Pratt, other individuals that had been incarcerated in the Calvary prison system that were up on the ideology of being New Africans, right? New African revolutionary nationalists. And that actually inspired a lot of brothers, you know, especially from the transition, from a lot of brothers come from the transition of being transitioned, considered themselves to be in the Black Liberation Movement, to transition to New African Independent Movement. Those are some individuals. Now, you can want an individual that helped inspire and push that, especially in regards to push and promote the teachings of the Spear and Shield, Yaki, other individuals that have been pushing line since the 70s, that have been pushing line for a while, even before St. Yika was even aware of certain things, you know. So it's all about what I got to say in particular right now, right? You know, with all I got to say, man. But I won't say the brother's going to be missed, man. You know, and... that revolutionization, they're trying to criminalize their revolutionary mind state, man, it's a great work, and it's a never-ending process. That process never ends, man. Once you train, that process never ends because we're a victim of criminalization by being in America. Like Malcolm X said, America means prison. And all the people who go to prison are considered to be criminals. So we attack all day, every day in regards to their criminal mentality. You want to call it the criminal mentality, you want to call it a nigger mentality. You know what I'm saying? Or the gangster mentality. We attack all day, every day in regards to that, man. So it's a never-ending battle in regards to stay strong and keep pushing and make that transformation. Because the transformation doesn't just happen overnight. That transformation can take your whole lifetime. Sometimes some individual still might learn certain things about that transformation and still not able to get it after 70 to 80 years or their life. You know, so it's a never-ending process, man. And that brother pushed that. You know what I'm saying? It book Monster, it falls in line of autobiography from Malcolm X. You know, it falls in line of The Prison Letter of George Jackson. It falls in line of showing that. If all the line of Elder Cleaver, Stolen Ice, you know, books that have been shown a transformative mindset from that criminal mindset.
You know, we got to understand that there is no such thing as a perfect human being. We all take the life. But what matters the most is the contribution. Like the brother you have to say, you know what I'm saying, if you leave something ideological footprint or leave something a theoretical footprint, if people,
even after your demise, 100 years after demise, that's what's important to push forward. You know, you leave something that people can take from, and grow from. An even set of foundation for people to follow after you're gone. You know what I'm saying? But that's what's important. Now I yield at that. You know, again, I'm gonna thank all your brothers for coming to the broadcast, share now that we understand it, right, and share y'all experiences. And I'm actually about to open the line up for. No, I'm going to have to line up for a couple of calls right quick. Let's see what they got to say. Let's see what they got to say. Okay. 334-421, your line is open. If you got any question, comment, or statement to make, please do so at this time. Your line is open. 334-421, your line is open. Okay. And then say. Open another line. I'll see what they got to say. Five, six, two, two, one, two. Your line's open. If you have any questions, comments, statements that make any time. Your line's open. You can do so at any time.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes. Go ahead.
Okay, great. I'm just... Free the land. I'm just enjoying the discussion. It's informative,
it's also
an opportunity to just be in commune with those that are focusing on Brother Sayinka. And it's wonderful to know that he left so much behind for us to follow and to keep up with and to measure. I yield.
Okay, I appreciate it, Mama Shakar. Real land, Mama. Real land.
All right.
Okay. Well, I have a question, right? You know, I have a question in regards to what New Africa was saying. You y'all get brother? New Africa.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Okay. You had mentioned a response to the Black Earth 21st Century Revolutionary System of Black Nationalism, right? Could you go more into that in regard to why you mentioned that and why is it important for people to understand that?
I mentioned it because it is essential to we can't get where we want to go if we don't know where we're trying to go. You know, so one of the challenges of struggle right now is the lack of clarity and the vague nature of things that people utilize, language that people utilize in the pursuit of liberation, like black liberation, which can mean anything to any number of people, you know. And it's important to bring clarity to a concrete political objective that we're fighting to achieve, like the struggle for land independence and socialism, and also to clear up things that can actually cause confusion to people who think they may be engaging with an organization with a particular position based on the names that they give themselves, but those names may not reflect what those names seem to communicate. And that was one of the situations with the New African Black Panther Party, you know, is that it was an organization that did not defend the struggle for land and does not defend the struggle for land and independence, but utilized terminology in its name that could create some confusion around that. And also, it was important to defeat those arguments, which are not just raised by that organization, but by many organizations, several organizations that call themselves revolutionary nationalist organizations, but don't advocate a struggle for land and independence and still treat this issue as if it is a question that's not resolved, when it's a question that really was never a question for many people. And it's a question that was resolved by New African nationalists a long time ago. But it was also important not just to address the opportunism that went into the name, but to address the underlying arguments, you know, and effectively that they were arguing and others argue that there are nations that don't need national territory, you know, nations that don't need self-determination, you know, that somehow our struggle for land and independence is a reactionary and even, you know, racist struggle or some nonsense like that. You know, and that somehow we have to subordinate our struggle for national liberation, and especially for those who take a communist line or a socialist line. Though many people just say that as well, just like some of them say New African because it's just a thing to say. It makes them sound more radical when their politics really are not in concert with the names that they're utilizing. You know, that we do not have to subordinate our struggle for land and independence to some broader settler state revolution. You know, that our struggle for national liberation is a struggle in and of itself that not only should not be subordinated, cannot be subordinated, but that actually it is the only struggle. It is the struggle that will lead to the overthrow of American imperialism. It's not somehow something that's going to undermine that struggle, which is the line that was put forward by the New African Black Panther Party. You know, and so it's really, but not just them. So I think it's a critical article to read. It's called Get Up for the Downstroke, right, because it goes over a history of struggle as well and where the struggle for land and independence is rooted. And it addresses some of the organizations that came into being that preceded the forming of the PG, including organizations like the Revolutionary Action Movement, like RAM, you know, that also in different sections of that organization had people who were articulating the line for land and independence, and that became a dividing question for some of those people as well. But if you dig into that writing, as well as the other writings in that book, you'll have an opportunity to come to see not just what he's against, that the organization that he's responding to put out, but also an active and a positive presentation of what we need to be fighting for, you know, and that we have a national reality, not a national question, right? The nation is. It is not something, and it is in a way that's objective. You know, we are a people, and this is not something that doesn't have a material basis. We are a people with a common language, with a common historic that became a people on a common landmass where we were the majority for a period of centuries and who were driven off that landmass by terrorism, both physical terrorism, physical violence, and economic violence, and dispersed throughout the empire. You know, we're not a nation within a nation. We're a colonized nation within an empire. And that our freedom, our liberation can be achieved by one means and one means only, and that is a struggle to achieve land independence and then also socialism. you know, for, and I think that's a critical aspect of what Sanyika brings to the table, is that he never shied away from defending a new African communist position, but also the necessity of socialism for our people is so critical when we talk about liberating the national territory. Because if we look at who controls the major means of production in Mississippi, Alabama, South Carolina, Louisiana, Georgia, who owns the factories? Who owns the wealth and the wealth-producing materials in our territory? And how much of the land that our people used to own has fallen in the hands of the settler state or settler multinational corporations? And how do we achieve anything approximating liberation without seizing those means of production? And how could we justly redistribute it outside of socialism? You know, would that be liberation to liberate a national territory and even expropriate the settler capitalist only to redistribute it to a handful of Negro capitalists who would then take on the role that they've played exploiting the working class people? And so Sanyika, in all of those writings, he addresses that. But in that Get Up or the Downstroke, he really does a great job of answering the question of why we still need land, of laying out a history of struggle, and also linking people to other, if you read that, he references the works of that came out of Spear and Shield and other works in that article. So you can go deeper into the things that he's saying in that article, in that piece, if you read it and then follow up with things that he references as well. And so I think it's a particularly powerful article, and it deals with a very contemporary matter, but that's a part of a struggle that has, even though this is a contemporary manifestation of it, right, it's really been the two-line struggle that's existed since we've been here. Are you trying to be an American, or are you trying to be free? Right. Are you trying to join the settler state in its imperialist quest for domination internationally, or are you trying to join the side of the people who are struggling to break the stranglehold of American imperialism on the oppressed nations of the world? You know, you're trying to be an American, or you're trying to be free. And whether you use revolutionary language or language that seems radical, you know, and use language that sounds nationalistic, but really you're advocating nothing more than, you know, radical integration, because that's really that's your choice. You know, either you can fight for a marginally improved situation under American society and be their nigger, you know, for another 400 years, or you can go the other route towards land and independence and towards joining the community of nations on an equal footing and playing as a nation a role in helping to liberate other oppressed nations. You know, so this is to me, this is why that's so important. And he writes in a way, one of the things that I liked about what the comrade Haki talked about is how sometimes the way in which some of the writings that, you know, were produced, including by Yaki, but also Wretched of the Earth, can be a little bit difficult to grasp. And Sanyika was good at breaking things down, you know, or, you know, making it plain, as some would say, right? And, you know, and to me, and to us, really, that's a really essential thing. And, but this book really get up, stand up and struggle, stand up, struggle forward is really something that I think in time will be considered a classic within the movement, you know. And but in addition to his book, I think it's beneficial even, I don't know if everyone on the call has seen the BET American Gangster program that was produced on Sanyika. And, you know, yeah, there are things to critique in it.
American Gangster.
Right on, yeah. And there's a lot to critique about the program, But nevertheless, what that program did was introduce, you know, a mass audience to Sanyika. And that opened the gateway for people to dig more into it. And he filled the gap. You know, because of some of his writings, you know, there wasn't a 10-year gap, you know, in new production of new African nationalist material. That's one of the reasons why we decided it was important for us to come out with the paper, is that we would find ourselves in community, you know, trying to organize study circles and other things, and the materials being very dated. And if you're using materials, all of which were produced before the people you're talking to were born, it gives the impression that there's been no movement, that there's been no progress. And Sanyika really filled the gap, and he leaves the gap, you know. And we'll have, and those of us who are on this call or who are listening to this call, you know, we have a task ahead of us to try to fill part of that gap, because we haven't yet really filled the gap that we that was left with the loss of Yaki. You know, that gap is still not full. You know, the gap that Sanyika is leaving, we must try to fill. And in reality, you know, as far as the New African Communist perspective, we've really yet to fill the gap that was created with the demise of the African Blood Brotherhood. You know, so we are in a process that, you know, requires a rebuilding of one, that tendency from those of us who hold that tendency, but really of the entire New African independence movement, and placing it as a whole on a more solid foundation so that we can build it to last, both in our individual organizations, our institutions, you know, and ourselves. You know, we need to take care of ourselves so that we build ourselves to last as well, you know. And it's tragic that we lost really a person who has such greatness, you know, in the way that we did.
Indeed.
Yes, sir.
Go ahead,
Mohammed.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just seconding what my comrade said, you know. It was, he put it pretty plainly, pretty well.
Yeah.
I know I don't write like these guys.
Yeah.
All
good.
As
long as you get your message across.
Yeah, we making a go of it. We got any other calls coming in?
Hold on. Let me open the other line. I'll see what you got to say. 773-355. You have a question, comment, statements to make it at time. So you do so at this time. 773-355. Your line is open. Well, 773-355.
Your line is open.
Oh,
this is Baba Khalid.
Real line.
Yeah.
Go ahead, all right.
Yeah, we came on. Pretty land, brother. I caught the last part, and I was greatly in agreement with what was said. And our brother, Sanyika, you know, he truly feel the loss of this brother. And, you know, we just wanted to concur with what was said and to thank you, Brother Bomani, for this program that allows us to give speech. Because there's no doubt that our people are colonized and oppressed in ways, and we're reaching a new time right now with this pandemic over then I see a new move being made that for unity, that we need to come together. The brother, that what I like most about the brother Sanjika was the transformation. The transformation from criminal mentality to a revolutionary mentality. That was deep, and that's what we are dealing with. A lot of bloods over here in Chicago, you know, with the transformation, particularly our political prisoners, you know, that's, we're trying to get out now. And I don't have much to say, but, you know, I'm just listening.
Okay.
Thank you, Bob.
Okay. I appreciate that, bro. Brother Haki. Brother Haki.
Yeah, I'm here, comrade.
Okay. I want you to mention the contributions that Sanjika made in all the third collective, you know, tell the people about the contributions and all that about that.
Let me just say to give a good perspective of, you know, his contributions to the August 3rd Collective. Sanjika, like in the early 90s, he was trying to organize, like, because, you know, Sanjika Shakur used to be, you know, like, far, like you said, with the shoe revolutionaries and the shoe, in the prisons that he was incarcerated in, you know, they was doing a lot of organizing while he was in the shoe. Well, the August 3rd Collective is one of those things, you know, one of his brain childs that he created when he was in the shoe. And because he know he was dealing with, like, the CCOs, the Consolidated Crip Organization and things like that. In 1993, he tried to start his own, because he always wanted, like, this one thing he always was telling me, like, he always wanted to create his own organization that he can really, like, build with a little small quadrant of people to build with, push his line when it comes to that Sanjika and that Yaki line of that new African communism. So in 1993, but he wanted to also do it as far as, like, not to negate some of the, you know, relationships he had with the Crips. So he wanted to create an organization where he can bring those type of individuals into it as well to get them to struggle along with the new African independence movement. One of those organizations he tried to create was in 1993, was like kind of like after he left the CCO, was he was trying to create an organization called the Clandestine Revolutionary Internationalist Party Soldiers. He tried to do it, but it didn't really get off the ground because, like you said, he was battling back and forth with those with the state, you know, in the penitentiary and going back and forth in the shoe. And some of the brothers out, you know, outside the walls, he couldn't really bring them in the fold like some of his, you know, comrades in the former gang that he was a part of. When that was the foundation, I always say is the predecessor to August 3rd Collective. Well, August 3rd Collective is really, a prison organization that started in the shoe. So when we get into the 2000s, he really wanted to push that forward, but like Baba Masai said, we couldn't really keep him out on the streets long, so he couldn't really, you know what I'm saying, push it and build it like he wanted to build it because he kept going back and forth in the prison. Like I said, when our relationship started to really become close and we got close and we started our own little building and things of that nature, he pulled me into the fold because I was on the outside, so he needed eyes on the outside to try to recruit other brothers into the August 3rd Collective. So that's where I came into the picture, to try to, you know, find younger, fresh blood, young brothers who was looking for change and things of that nature, you know what I'm saying, that wanted to do something with their lives and struggle for something more than just out there, you know, battling and fighting over street blocks that they don't own. So we wanted to bring brothers into the fold from the streets so we can politicize them and push this new African communist line so we can, you know, show them that they can struggle for something that's more progressive, like land and independence. So I would say probably around 2007, 2008, that's when we really went forward with the Augustine Collective, and we, you know, we pulled a lot of brothers in, you know what I'm saying? You know, we had our little own small quadrant of individuals that we were building with, a brother named Hodari, a brother named Takuma that I'm still in contact with, that's also a part of the Augustine Collective. We had a couple of sisters that we brought into the fold as well. You know, a sister named Daru Shakur, you know, because he also wanted to, you know, also incorporate sisters. He always wanted to keep sisters in the fold because, you know, at first, and then our name kind of turned into, like, because I know some of y'all may have noticed he was starting to use, like, the Amazon August 3rd Collective, and that was inspired off of Butch Lee. I know many people know who Butch Lee is, you know, who consider themselves as the Amazon. So, you know, calling it that for a minute, I said, you know, the struggles with him going back and forth into prison. So we couldn't really, like, really get it going like how we wanted to get it going. So we tried to do it one more time. And don't get me twisted, he had solid political bills. His contribution to the August 3rd Collective was really based on political education. So we were having class. Even though he was in the penitentiary, we were having class through these letters and the correspondence, through phone calls and things of that nature. We were having political classes and things of that nature, and building our minds and building our strong line and keeping that line going together. So we tried to do it one more time, and that's when we changed our name to the August 3rd Communist Organization, because he wanted to take the organization outside the walls into a more productive outside the walls organization. So when he came home that first time in like 2012, we was thinking that it really was going to get going, you know what I'm saying? You know, the comrades and things of that nature. You know, we thought that we was going to really get out here and put boots on the ground and get it going. But, you know, like Baba Masai said, he was struggling. You know, he had those struggles. He had those challenges. One was coming from the state, you know what I'm saying? Because when he got out, they put him immediately on house rest with the ankle monitor. So he couldn't even leave out the state in order for us to really even do the footwork with the August 3rd Communist Organization, because that's one of the first things we was going to do. He was going to start traveling and things of that nature, because he had, like, speaking engagements and all those type of things set up. But when he got out, the state hit him with the trap. He threw the ankle bracelet on him. And, you know, like I said, Sanjika was suffering from that post-traumatic stress disorder and things of that nature. So it wasn't really, you know, hard for him to kind of, like, fall back into that, like, okay, I'm under attack type of thing. So, you know, he always did his, like, going into, like, seclusion thing. And then coming in contact with the pigs, with the police, he was sent right back to prison. You know what I'm saying? And he went back, you know what I'm saying? I kept it going. I'm still keeping it going because, you know, I'm the researcher. You know what I'm saying? I'm the minister spokesperson. So I always kept him updated, and we always kept trying to build the August 3rd Collective. But at the end of the day, like you said, we couldn't really get too far with it because we couldn't go nowhere. But our political line and things of that nature, our political studies and all those type of things were strong all the way up until his demise and things of that nature. But, I mean, he contributed heavy to the August 3rd Collective. And also, people got to understand that he also was a combatant in the New African People's Liberation Army. That was something also that he helped start, you know, behind the walls in the SHU with a lot of the comrades in the SHU when he was in Pelican Bay and San Quentin. And Baba Amisha, he was also a heavy influence on that also when it came to the New African People's Liberation Army. They were as well So, you know, that was his contributions and things of that nature to the August 3rd Collective. Like, everything was basically, you know what I'm saying, on keeping that political line and trying to bring brothers off the street inside the pen and outside the pen and trying to, you know, build our little small quadrant to help struggle for land and independence. I yield.
True indeed. It's very imperative that people get a clear understanding of one particular line or a clear understanding exactly what an individual is about, right? You know, just like Bob Masai was saying earlier, he's speaking earlier about people position, about people a clear line, so to speak, what line a person pushing, like you had said as well, other individuals on this call had said about a clear particular line, right? You know, a lot of times you get, just like New Alfred Freeman saying, you know, that people use certain terms, certain ideas, certain concepts, they might use it as a way, I'm going to say they might use it as a way to catch fish or it might be popular or to basically influence people, but not necessarily follow what he actually pushing in general, you know, and to have an individual actually represent what he really pushing is a great asset that is always needed in the movement within itself, in any movement, you know, in general. You know, so it's a beautiful thing to hear that particular information, man, as well as know that in regards to a person's social standing, in regards to a person's personal struggles and conflicts and battles, individuals still remain consistent in regards to the particular work, in regards to the propagation, in regards to reaching others, especially the aspect of transferring that mind state, man. You know, education and transformation. You know, it's time you can represent that, especially in regards to the book Monster when he came to the prison system. You know, he really can't really read certain things, they really interpret certain things. And like you saying earlier, that you really can't engage what Fanon was talking about or what Yaki was talking about. But it's how you can put it in a simpler form for you, right? You know, which is a beautiful thing. I'm going to open the line for
he could translate Fanon. What people would perceive as hard reads, he would break it down to the most simplest logical, you know what I'm saying, translation. And that's what he did with me, because like I told you before, I had terrible, you know what I'm saying, hard times trying to comprehend Fanon. But over the years of me and him building, I finally got it. And it's like even with communism, like at one point, you know, in dialectic materialism and historical materialism and all these type of things that would be perceived as hard to individuals who, you know what I'm saying, may never ever read these type of things or never knew about these type of things. You coming from the streets, you feel me? Like, that's a very difficult thing to try to read those type of reads. So, you know, like over the years when it got, you know what I'm saying, from these bills and these political what they call penitentiary classes, you know what I'm saying, building with him from the inside to the outside, like, he could break it down so simple. You know what I'm saying? Many individuals don't really have that special skill to break it down the way he could break it down. You know what I'm saying? And that's one of the big losses, you know what I'm saying, because it's like, you know, we do have individuals who can do it. It's a lot of us out here who can still do it, but the way Sanyika could, you know, teach it to somebody that's coming from the streets, or somebody who may not ever, you know what I'm saying, even know of a Fanon or know of communism or know of these type of things, me trying to, you know what I'm saying, get this political education and, you know what I'm saying, transform their mind and build their mind from a criminal mind into a revolutionary mind, you know what I'm saying, some of us, you have to be taught, you have to be broke down as simple as it can be so we can get it, and over time, we can build ourselves up to understand it. So that's what I'm going to miss from my brother, is the fact that, you know, the way he could teach it to me and he could teach it to others and he can make it so simple, you know what I'm saying, so that we can teach it to others. That's what I'm going to miss from him. I yield.
True indeed. appreciate that. Bob Masai, you still there, good brother?
I am still here.
Okay. Yeah, I wanted to mention to you that I had a conversation with Sanyika, you know, that one time over the phone, and he had mentioned that that he looked up to you, and you were an inspiration to him, right? You was a big brother. What I wanted to know was how was it actually working with Sanyika in regards to how was it actually working with him? You know, what type of individual he was in regards to doing a particular work.
Well, me and Sanyika, when we could communicate, it was a good relationship. Actually, when I think about it, it went back a lot of years. And I think about some benchmarks, so I know it went back a lot of years when we could communicate. It was pretty good. I found him to be like, you know, how shall I say it? Never found him to be arrogant. I found him to be definitely quite different than the way the state would describe him. I think some other folks mentioned it too. He's like, I found him to be like, in a lot of ways, he had a warm personality, which, again, didn't fit with what they say. A lot of times it doesn't fit with what they say. Conversations would be good. I think I mentioned to you one of the things we had talked about at one time was, that's when he told me he was thinking about Islam. We never got to finish that and follow that up. I think that was one of the last conversations we had. But it goes back, because it would have went back to with him and Tamu. And, of course, yeah, with their children would have been little. So, yeah, so it went back a while. But I found him to be a... I guess it's too simplistic a word would be just to say a nice person. And there were some people he would work with that might be very much common to some situations or some things I might have been around. So, yes.
Okay.
I mean, it would have been good. I think a lot of us would have looked forward if, in fact, and this is one of the things when folks talk about him not being able to travel, it would have been good if we could have ever got him out here in the Atlanta area for a while. Because I know some other people have tried it, but we would have liked to have him out here for a while. That was...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Most definitely. That part of the conversation that it had been entertained to get him on the East Coast here. If not in the national territory, get them on the East Coast, period, in Baltimore, New York, somewhere like that, other place, not just that's territory, to get them on the East Coast, period, man, get up from the West Coast, because a lot of people felt like that the West Coast was keeping them oppressed for real, man, because of all the different restrictions he had in regards to parole, his paperwork, his history, that what he represents, what he is, and all the relationship of the individuals and collectors, he's been a greater asset, to be removed from that particular environment, so to speak,
Yes.
And especially with his relationship with the police, it wasn't a good relationship at all. Like he was constantly under attack by the police over there, so. It definitely would have been great to get him from over there.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
Mr. Bomani.
Yes, sir.
Well, would it be possible would somebody go ahead and mention about the tribunal? I wanted to mention about the International Tribunal in Spirit of Mandela Coalition that's coming up in October.
Go ahead, bro.
Okay. There's a tribunal that Jericho Amnesty Movement for political prisoners, POW, has been a part of an effort, I think it was originally pushed by Brother Jaleel Montague, But it's a tribunal scheduled for this October. It's almost like a repeat of what was done in 79. We want to have some invited international jurists to come on out, and it's going to be dealing with human rights violations here in the United States to hold the U.S. government accountable for certain actions. You can find out more about it by going on either the Jericho website, and there's a link, or there's also a website. It's the spiritofmandela.org, and you can find out more about it. But anyway, the tribunal itself is going to be held in October. But it would be good for folks in their locales to find out, get more information about it, because we're actually looking for testimony to come from individual areas. And particularly, like, a lot of the people that we're talking about now, you know, with a lot of the prisons we're talking about, aren't people that certain people even know about. And so we really need people to get involved that can represent them, you know, to make sure documentation is collected both on the prisoners and the conditions that they're undergoing. Those are political prisoners, POWs, or even, new African citizens behind the walls, period. The documentation, if we don't have it, then a lot of times they're not represented. So there's a webinar that will be on this. I think it's next Tuesday. And again, you can find out how to register for it by going on either the Jericho website and getting the link, or you can go ahead and go to the Spirit of Mandela Coalition. And it was the Spirit of Nelson Mandela. Nelson has been dropped because a lot of folks pointed out that the sister is a fighter in her own right, Winnie Mandela. So it's the spiritofmandela.org, and the tribunal deals with issues related to what's happening to New African people in particular. There's also, of course, the We Charge Genocide Conference. I think that's in December, from Sister Fillet, from the Million Women March. I don't have their website address with me right now, but that's another effort that would be good for folks to be involved in. They have regular calls pretty much every week. And also, you know, they also be pushing that We Charge Genocide petition that we've taken before international bodies before. So, yes, I wanted to mention those two things. And just as another point, and I have to mess with my other brothers about this, I'm actually a Muslim. So sometimes, just for a point of clarity, but I'm among those who relate to the struggle against all forms of oppression, including national oppression and the genocide against New African people. But I'm a Muslim, and I'm part of a body of Muslims who are committed to that struggle, and many of them are inside. You know, whether you start with Imam Jamir al-Amin, part of that national community, my Imam, or, you know, who some people know as Jeff Ford, that's in Florence, Colorado, Brother Malmeen Kaber, who's, he has COPD, he's in stage 4 emphysema. They've only given him a couple of years, it's going back 5 years. He was trying to get a lung transplant, hasn't got that. He was turned down recently for a compassionate release that has been put in since September, and it's a ridiculous move. I mean, of course, he's not the only one. We know of many other prisoners, you know, who have serious health conditions and have been denied for compassionate release or any kind of consideration. But I'm part of that body of Muslims, so I wanted to put that out there also. We do recognize oppression, and we feel it's an obligation to fight against it in all forms.
True indeed. True indeed, man. So that's a very helpful information. People need to get involved, man, especially when it comes to, especially identify being a continental African, man. You know, like, you need to get involved with anything dealing with genocide, anything dealing with political prisoners and the wars. Because those are some of the things that we stand for, especially in regards to independence. independent, you know what I'm saying? We want reparations in regards to land, monetary reparations, and the freedom of all our captive citizens, be it a New African prison of war, New African political prison, or just a captive citizen in general. We want some of the things. And we also recognize that we have been exposed to genocide since we've been here, you know, since we've been brought here in China, shackles, and, you know, since our business and other things. We've been exposed to that for hundreds of years, right? And the genocide shit can go on, you know, and we actually formed, you know what I'm saying, formed collective throughout the years, throughout the movements to combat some of the genocide and combat some of the ill treatment that we're facing right now to this day. You know, so it's very imperative that people get involved in the efforts, you know what I'm saying, be it the tribunal, be it real political prisoners, prisoner wars, be it propagating, be it we charge genocide or whatever it may be, get involved with these campaigns and programs, man, and be active. And the main thing about everything is that you educate yourself. You know what I'm saying? That's what their whole broadcast about education. You educate yourself. You know what I'm saying? At least pick up something to read. Or, you know, a lot of times people look at, we're living in an age and era right now where people are rather look at videos, you know, they're rather look at videos and movies than actually read something or you know, actually try to write something, articulate their own thoughts on what they're reading, you know. With this age and era we're looking at. And we also understand that in this age that a lot of information in these books that have been put out years ago, they'll hide a lot of these books, they're banning books, they're censoring books, they're taking them out of circulation. Because they know the power of the information you need, but, you know, they want to control everything. They want to put everything in PDF form and modify certain things and, you know, remove certain things from the books and leave materials to start the educational process, you know, which is very imperative for our liberation. You know, those are some things that you always be mindful of and things that can remind us about certain things, right? At this time, I'm open up a couple of callers right quick if you ain't got anything to say. They ain't got anything to say. Okay, let me see what this is. 901-506. You have a question, comment, statement to make, please, for the time. 901-506, your line is open. You have anything to say?
I'm just listening in, bro.
901. Okay, that's good, brother. That's good, brother. Free land, bro. What's
up? How am I with free land?
What's up? Okay. Let me see the individual got anything to say. 614-285. You got any question, comment, statement, make this time, please do so this time. 614-285, your line is open.
Well, my 924 from blindness kicked in real hard, so I'm a late arrival, but I'd like to greet your guests, Freeland, Ureardi, and thank you for the work that you are doing that is benefiting our people and maintaining our history and our herstory. I am grateful to you for that. I am Elder Mama Kandi.
Okay. Free line with us. Thank you, Mama Kandi. Thank you, Elder Mama Kandi. We salute you for that effort. Thank you for that. Salute you for the work you all did as well. Okay.
Thank you, Boma.
You're welcome. Okay. Yeah, we actually got like 15 minutes left, right? You know, 15 minutes left. You know, one of the things I want to ask is, you know, in regards to, hold up. Oh, okay. I got some information about the We Charge Genocide. If we charge genocide, the People Mass Assembly Preparatory Justice Now will take place on September 4, 2021 at 12 o'clock noon at the United Nations Headquarters, New York. For more information, you can email National A Million Women March at AOL.com, or you can call or text 267-636-3802. You know, and the base that agenda for, you know, that they're gonna take it to the court. They're gonna address the United Nations in regards to the treatment, the ill treatment received in those years, and the continuation of what Paul Robeson, Queen Mother Moore, other individuals have been pushing for years. You know, they're gonna come out with self-determination, solidarity. They're gonna have a protest rally. Gonna be various events that are taking place. You know, what I'm saying, to push this. You know, that they're also putting together a documentation that they're going to present and with the help of stewards and lawyers, the other individuals they're going to present to the United Nations in regards to the treatment of African people in general as a whole in America and the empire. So it's imperative that everybody get involved with this, you know, as much as possible. If you push a liberation, you push independence, you push a nationalism, or you just want to be free in general, what are you pushing, you know, you want to be in the struggle. It's imperative that we all get involved with this, get our, have our hands on it, and communicate. It's very imperative, you know. Those are some of the things that we should be doing in general and pushing forward.
Comrade Bomani,
yes.
One thing I also wanted to announce is the that there will be a memorial service for Sanyuka, for Comrade Sanyuka Shakur. On Saturday,
yes,
June 26th, from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m., that I believe is going to be West Coast time, you know, so, and it will also be live streamed. So, but people who are in California, it's going to be at the Bethel AME Church, 7900 Southwestern Avenue in Los Angeles, California, 90047 zip code. And but it will be live streamed, and the link for the live stream information hasn't been provided yet. But if we get that, we'll share it with you, and if you could share that out, if everyone could share it out once we get it and share it out, or if others get it for us and share it out, then we will share that out as well, so that people who aren't able to attend in person, like most of us may not be, can still have an opportunity to view the memorial service for Sanyuka. And just briefly, Comrade Masayan, you also mentioned the prison struggle, both for political prisoners, as well as just new Africans who are behind the wall in general. Now, it is something we must engage in, the struggle, because the prisons are a major front of struggle, because it's a major tool of the settler state national oppression of new African people. It is a major instrument of national oppression, both the actual physical structure, but then also that penal system that created those difficulties for Sanyuka and many others to move out of those environments that are less advantageous to their participation in struggle. You know, and of course, also we have to be creative as New African nationalists and revolutionists about how we can evade those situations, you know, and overcome the difficulties of the state that they may place on our movement, so that in some cases, you know, we have to have that capacity to move where we want to move and where we need to move in spite of those circumstances. And that's a capacity that we have to develop, as well as, you know, we mentioned many times the challenges the brother had, but we may not all have the same challenge, but we all have our challenges, you know. We published the creed, the New African Creed, in every issue of the paper, Rebuild. And if we, it's important in my, we believe it's important to use that creed, to read the creed on a regular basis, and then to ask yourself, as a sort of self-check, are you living in a way that's in alignment with that? And one of the things that's in the creed is, you know, that we will seek by word and deed to heal the black family and to bring into the movement and into the community mothers and fathers, brothers and sisters left by the wayside. So we have many of us who may have been brought into the movement and into the community, but that doesn't mean that we're not all subject from time to time to fall a little bit by the wayside. You know, so it's not just important for us to be able to bring people in to the community, but to help them, you know, once they're in, to not fall by the wayside to the extent that we can. And we have to develop a much greater capacity to be helpful in that area, because the enemy's state attack will not subside. In fact, it will only intensify as the material conditions that will make independence possible within the lifetime of people who are listening to this call or who are on the call, you know, advance. We even have a situation now where not just revolutionists, but even petty bourgeois authors like are coming out with books talking about the importance of moving to the territory and becoming a majority on the territory again. There's a book by Charles Blow called The Devil You Know, and he's a writer, a columnist for the New York Times. And even though he's not a nationalist, he's not a revolutionist, he still wants you to stay a nigger in America for another 400 years. He understands that the only place where you can have a marginally improved position of power is within the South, is within the territory. You know, so in some ways, he's ahead of some of those who would call themselves revolutionists. You know, so we... But the time is more fortuitous than any other time in the history of our people to advance the struggle for land and independence. But we have to do it by being more thoroughly engaged in the mass struggles of our people, and particularly those mass struggles that are taking place on the territory.
True indeed. True indeed. We actually have like 7 minutes left. If y'all are prepared to give y'all final comments and thoughts, y'all can do so at this time, man. Y'all can do so. I'm gonna say, whoever want to go first, go ahead. They can do so. Get their final statements and final thoughts.
I would just say that there's also family GoFundMe for Sayika. All you got to do is go to the GoFundMe page and put in Marsha Cody, a.k.a. Sayika Shakur, homegoing. And because, you know, so many people have been asking how could they help the family and things of that nature. If they're listening, or the people who will listen to this, they do have a family GoFundMe that's up where you can contribute to Brother Sayika's homegoing, and you can donate on that website. It hasn't been really put out there like that, but it is a GoFundMe link and a GoFundMe page that you can go to, you know, go to donate. And that's about it. I would just like to say thank you for, you know, bringing me on, Conrad, and, you know, the brother going to be dearly missed. His legacy lives on. You know, when one brother fall down, keep it going. Stand up, struggle for it.
Right on. I just want to say, long live Conrad Brother Sayika Shakur. Long live the New African Independence Movement. And I forgot what else I was going to say. It was one more. Oh, Pamoja Tutashembe.
True indeed. True indeed. We ran a walk. True indeed. Well, by Messiah, New Africa, what y'all final thoughts here?
Well, like others, I thank you for the opportunity to talk about our brother. Thank you for the opportunity to talk about other issues related to our people, the independence movement, the struggle against oppression. And I guess other people have already covered everything. I thank you, and free to land.
I mean, yes, sir.
Cameron Gomani, I'd like to thank you for hosting the show and just keeping the show going, you know, and helping to promote the struggle for land and independence with the show. Also, Brother Haki has been one of the most active New African nationalists with respect to social media anywhere, and, you know, has reached hundreds of thousands of people as a consequence of that. and we really appreciate that in the Rebuild Collective. We're working on improving our own capacity in that area, so we really appreciate what you're doing there. And Comrade Masai, who I would also like to appreciate for his consistency in advancing the struggle for land and independence over the decades, and his central role in my own participation in the struggle for land and independence. You know, so he found me, by the way, side effectively, and brought me into the movement and into the community. You know, and Comrade Hondo also for maintaining the line of New African Communism, making sure the thought and teachings of Yaqui and other New African Communists and other New African Revolutionary Nationalists stayed alive during periods of less heightened activity. You know, so we have we've lost a great contributor to the struggle, especially the theory and the writings in New African Independence with the passing of Comrade Tanika. And again, long live the comrade. Please dive and dig into all of his writings and in his books, and share them with other people so that you don't just have it yourself. You know, don't be stingy with the knowledge. Share it as far and as wide as you can. And again, within the next couple of weeks, we'll be putting out a special tribute issue of Rebuild, a New African Nationalist periodical dedicated to the life and memory of Comrade Tanika Shakur. So, Rebuild to Win.
Real land. I want to thank all y'all again for coming to the show, sharing out and understanding. Thank you for the work y'all committed in the past, the work you committed in the present, the work you committed in the future. If you got any comrade, loved ones, associates, or friends, or relatives behind enemy lines, please look into our website, which is www.georgiauniversity.com. Again, it's www.georgiauniversity.com. And also, there's a new provision to go to Public Africa radio show. Program that's going to be debuting next Monday at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You know, it's PGR Radio, where we're talking about issues dealing with the PGRNA in regards to the history, documentation, the works, the efforts, and what's going on, particularly right now in the New African Independent Movement. Long live Sandy Secure, long live New African Independent Movement. All the brothers who's in the sea. I see our brother soon. The struggle off land, independence, free land.
Free land.
Body, mean, necessary.